pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thanks for coming, audience. A couple members of the audience here. Nice to see. 1996, we're going to kick off with big attendance, I can see. Double our usual numbers. Can we have a roll call for attendance, please?
Richard Blair.
Here.
Mendoza.
Here. All directors are accounted for, present. The first item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes. The minutes were just laid before us this evening. Let's take a moment to glance over them and I'll entertain a motion on the approval of the minutes. I found some information regarding item number 6 that's in the minutes, and I actually have a copy of the original memo from Institute to us, if it's of any use to you. Was anything earth-shaking, as I did say that they were giving us trees and they would maintain them. It was about a half-page memo from Institute rep to us.
I just had the deal.
Well, the agreement is probably more comprehensive than this letter is. Okay, anything in order? Do I have a motion?
A motion we approve the minutes of December 6th meeting.
I have a motion by Director Blair. Do I have a second?
Second.
And a second by Director Mendoza. All directors in favor of approving the minutes say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Okay, motion passed unanimously. Item number 2 is a public comment period. Anyone in the public would like to speak to an issue that's not on the agenda for discussion tonight, they can do so at this time. Ask that you keep your presentation of 3 minutes if you can. Is there anything anyone wants to talk about that's not on the agenda? Okay. Nothing for item number 2 then. We'll move on to item number 3 under Board Administration. This is the Southland Wastewater Facility Expansion. Mr. Jones?
Yeah, Mr. President, the board, we call it, the district had hired the firm of Jim Garing Associates and in conjunction with John Jink of King Jink Engineering to review and design the Southland Sewer Plant Expansion, in which Mr. Jenks made a presentation of the study at last month's meeting. And now Mr. Garing is here to go over actually the physical facilities and the staging of the improvements. And I'll turn the time over to Mr. Garing.
Okay. Well, Mr. President, members of the board, good evening. I'm Jim Garing, your engineer on this project. And I'd like to just briefly review where we are on expanding the Southland Wastewater Treatment Plant.
Okay.
So I've got a number of diagrams on the wall here to talk about. I may, first of all, the furthest to my left, anyway, is the existing plant site with the boundary shown in yellow, where the wastewater comes into what we call the headworks over here off of the Southland transmission main. It goes through the headworks, it gets ground, and then it gets, first it gets measured as far as the flow goes, then it gets ground. Then it gets pumped up to the aeration machine. We currently are operating 2 aeration machines today, these 2 right here. Now, some years ago, in anticipation of a future plant expansion, Ryder Gray commissioned us to do the grading design for a future aeration lagoon, and in fact, that whole design exists today. It hasn't been put in service, there's no piping or anything to it, but the excavation. Now, so we aerate the wastewater in the 2 aeration lagoons and biologically stabilize it, and then we take the effluent from that process out and we percolate it into 6 infiltration basins currently. Those basins are shown here in the with the diagonal blue lines. As we stand today, The technical capacity of our existing plant is about 360,000 gallons per day. You'll recall that the study you had done by Boyle Engineering Corporation indicated that we should really be aiming for a future capacity of 940,000 gallons per day, or not quite a 3-to-1 increase in capacity over the next decade or so. When John Jenks did the initial part of our study, he concluded that that expansion should be done in a number of stages, and we may wish to combine several stages. So what I wanted to do tonight was explain the stages in general and perhaps get some comments from the board and just basically bring you, make sure you're up to speed on where we are in the project. Stages 1 through 3, first of all, stage 1, the most important thing to do first is to improve the grinding capacity. Our current grinder is way overloaded and routinely backs up the sewer line. So that would be the first thing we need to do. Now, we currently have a single 8-inch grinder in our grinder pit, and the plan today is to replace that single 8-inch grinder with two 12-inch grinders. And those 12-inch grinders in parallel will take us clear through the ultimate plant expansion. That would be stage one. Stage two would be to increase the pumping capacity from our headworks lift station. Right now, the wastewater comes into the plant, goes through the grinders, and then we have to pump it up to our aeration lagoon. Currently, those two pumps are each capable of about 600 or 630 gallons per minute. Ultimately, each of those two pumps needs to be 2,000 gallons per minute. So you see, we need a substantial increase in pumping capacity at the Edwards pumping plant. Now, Doug and I are currently discussing whether or not we want to include increasing those pumps in capacity with stage one and three, but ultimately those pumps will need to be increased. We think we may wish to operate for a period after improving the grinders and adding to our aeration capacity and improving our metering capacity and see whether we need those pumps upgraded right away or not. It's considerable expense to do them now, and we may learn with more accurate metering and grinding that we can put that off for a couple of years. If we can, likely will be put off.
Didn't stage one also include an upgrade of some 8 or 10 inch pipe to 12 inch
right,
in addition to the grinders?
That's right. Now, where the wastewater comes into the headworks of the plant, it comes into what we call the flume manhole. And that manhole has got a metering flume in it, which, by the way, has never worked correctly since the day of itself. The piping out of that flume manhole is too small to allow that flume to work. And when we began to look into fixing the metering process, because we know we've had a metering problem over the years, in order for that flume to work right, we were going to have to increase the pipe size. So it really never has worked correctly. So we believe that once we get the flume and grinding situation fixed, we may find we don't need some of the other improvements quite as soon as we thought before. Now, from the flume manhole to what we call the turning manhole, there's an 8-inch pipeline. It's far too small, even for today's flows. And that will be replaced with a 12-inch pipeline. And then out of the turning manhole, we'll go to two 12-inch pipelines and through the grinders. It's after the grinders that we may want to wait on pipeline size increases, but ultimately they will be required to meet our final capacity. As part of stage three, we would bring on the third aeration lagoon, where we currently have a big hole in the ground now. We would bring that aeration lagoon on. And in addition, we would institute a new aeration technology. Currently we have a total of 6 floating aerators out on the existing 2 aeration lagoons, and we don't believe that they're giving us the kind of efficiency that we really think we can get in bottom aeration. Those of you who may have had a chance to go out to the Black Lake wastewater treatment plant will notice that it's operating very, very well. It has very, very low sludge concentrations, and we think that that's at least in part because of the aeration system that's in the operation there. We're planning on going to an aeration system here at the Southland plant. It would be very similar to that the Black Lake plant, with the exception of going to much quieter compressors. In any case, as part of phase three, we would bring on our third aeration lagoon, and we would also prepare to two sludge drying beds. Right now we have no real facility to handle sludge drying and disposal. So we think that's an important part of the plant expansion that Jenks did not mention, but nonetheless Doug and I talked about it and we agree we need some sludge handling facilities. So this basin here, these two basins here would be constructed as sludge drying beds. By the way, as a matter of interest, the state water pipeline comes right through this area of the plant. Also, as part of stage three, we would reconfigure existing infiltration basins and construct two new infiltration basins to bring our infiltration basin capacity up from about 5 acres to about 9 acres. So we've got enough area to infiltrate that water. Stage three aeration taking place in these three aeration lagoons shown here in larger scale. We start out after stage three with two aeration blowers with a pad in the building for a third blower someday in the future so we can add that third blower and bring on a fourth basin. But with three basins, we would aerate with subsurface aerators in the pattern shown. This would be future. Stage four would be to go ahead and bring up the fourth aeration basin. That would be this one or this one. And so at stage four, we would have four basins in operation for aeration. But we think that sometime in the future, and the intermediate stage three, would take us to about 600,000 gallons per day. It may be when we get to 600,000 gallons per day that technology may have changed, or need for water has changed, or the regulatory climate may have changed. So we think that it's prudent to wait until we really need to bring these additional basins up until that time. But in any case, when it becomes necessary, the fourth aeration lagoon could be brought up and the remaining five infiltration basins could be brought online. That's basically the four stages we're looking at. And of course, at this level of treatment, we'd be at a capacity of 940,000 gallons a day, which is basically what Mr. Jenks brought to you last month in his presentation and what Boyle recommended.
Now, the presentation indicated that we've got an 8-inch pipe now in a couple of areas that's going to be replaced by 212. Now, that's in preparation for the 0.94 MGD flows that are like 15, 20 years away or whatever, right? Okay. Because we don't want to dig that up again. So you're talking about really oversizing now at this point, at least at the head works. And then
from the turning manhole through the clear through the pump station would be all new piping clear up to ultimate capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Boyle report indicates that the Southland transmission main, which comes to this plume manhole, is too small.
Mm.
And actually, the plume is ultimately likely to be a little bit too small at ultimate build-out. But if you put the ultimate build-out plume in now, it would be too large. In other words, its ratio of measurement is for a larger plume, especially we wouldn't be accurately measuring low flows if we put one in now. We don't think it's wise to do that until flows are considerably elevated. And at that time, since the 12-inch main that's in south, or coming from Southland, is too small, at that time, likely we would be building a parallel 12-inch main out to the plant and tie in the turning manhole and utilize the 212 that is ongoing design.
Now that ties in what's in our package tonight on the proposed Southland sewer for the pickman and all that?
No, it's just entirely. This is just upgrading the existing sewer line in Southland.
Okay, I understand that, but some of the improvements that Jim is bringing up regarding Southland line being too small, would that be addressed when the Southland sewers get expanded and more lots come online there?
Yeah, well, basically the Boyle engineering report includes the whole Southland area for collection of wastewater, so that is included in the when it comes online,
right.
You can close up later.
They are, is including that capital improvement in their capital improvement plan. Timing is something that will have to be set when the need really becomes more known as flows pick up this time.
What's the
length of that 12-inch line?
This one here that goes back to Southland? It's probably, I'm going to guess it's around a third of a mile. So I don't know exactly off the top of my head.
What's beyond that?
I'd have to have a district.
And then I'll write the corner of the road south, and from there to First Menlo, we have to be a 6 foot. And there's a section in the front row we have to be a 3. Case on all four.
Okay.
The other thing is that Jenks indicated in his report that we would ultimately need about 15 acres of infiltration basins. That's these basins here where we infiltrate our effluent back into the groundwater system. And the plant expansion, the acquisition that's shown here in pink, and the ultimate basin layout shown on this diagram through phase four, does accommodate a little over 15 acres of basins, infiltration basins. There have been, I've heard some comments that say, well, you really are wasting water by not recycling it somehow putting it to better use than just soaking it into the ground. It's actually, that is one of the best recycling that you can do, is to put it back in the groundwater basin. And with that, I just entertain questions by the board.
Phase one, I remember that being about $150,000, right?
That was John Jenks' estimate at the time. on that, that's a good point. John Jenks assumed we would probably be able to get by with one 12-inch grinder.
That's my next question.
And when we began to look into these grinders and queried the factory on their hydraulic characteristics, we found that even though the grinder that John was suggesting had a capacity of 2,500 gallons a minute, which would be plenty, it took about 4 feet of water head to make it work that full rate, and we don't have that available here. So in order to get the capacity, we needed to go to two 12-inch grinders, which has a sort of a sidebar benefit of giving us some redundant reliability that we have on down. We can still operate on a sort of a limp home mode while we fix the down grinder on the other grinder.
So is it double the price, or is it not double?
I think it will add about somewhere in the $50,000 range for that base one.
And that's pretty imminent. We need to do stage one upgrades. The stage one upgrades takes us to 0.4 million gallons a day per capacity, right? And that would just handle our almost existing peak flow, right?
The pink area, is that the area we're
going to
get from Walsh, 10 acres?
That's the 10 acres that we have proposed to acquire, and the 10 acres that we're currently in negotiation with the water corridor.
Is that going to be enough for us then in the future?
My personal belief is that 10 acres will be adequate. It certainly meets the requirements that John Jenks came up with in terms of facing the areas and with a little bit of a safety factor, so I think it's adequate. Yes. Okay.
How did it get along without the sludge drying of the two basins you have up there? And what did they do with that when they dry it? Just over? They sucked all the way down.
Right now, well, it was fairly recently the district has instituted a small sludge management program where some sludge has been withdrawn from the basins, but by and large, the sludge has accumulated in these two basins since they were built, and most of the sludge has not been withdrawn. It's not adversely affecting plant operation as we speak, but it does need to be dealt with in the future, and that's why we're providing the facility. That sludge would be likely be hauled to the landfill after it's dried in the flood drying bed. And maybe that there are some other disposal methods available. The county of San Luis still, to my knowledge, does not have a joint sludge disposal facility, but
several of the water districts that I've belonged to previous to coming here, for example, the Lost Virginies down in Thousand Oaks, they sell the sludge as a mill organite type fertilizer. and it's worked very, very well in keeping the golf courses green and so on and so forth. And it obviously more than pays for itself in terms of the disposing of it.
That may well be a possibility. I would mention that there have been some, in the last year or so, year and a half or so, there have been some additional federal regulations on it, how sludge has to be treated to be utilized for that purpose. And we have to look into that to see if that can be done.
The orientation of those ponds, you're showing two, let's say, stage three ponds.
These two.
Right. You know, perpendicular to the stage three ponds above them. If we didn't acquire that pink area, or couldn't, or prevent it from, for some reason, would those ponds, could possibly those two be swung parallel with the other two? And if so, how long would that hold us over?
Well, as far as physical, as far as our work in reconfiguring the ponds, I don't think that would be more than a few days' work.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't believe there's any holdover in the district if that happens. They can be reconfigured. We'll take some thought to make sure it works out right. Right now, we're trying to aim for roughly equal pond sizes as an operational tool so that our operators can put a pond online for a given length of time and know how long they can leave it on time. They know all the ponds are about the same size. They can go a certain length of time, and it's not an operational problem to have to keep checking the pond over and so forth. We want to keep that characteristic if we could, if we didn't reconfigure.
All right, to complete stage two, can you just recap this for a second? What stage two involves and what possibly the cost might be with accomplishing stage two? As a way.
Well, I'll defer to Mr. Jenks' report. I'll dig that out as far as the cost.
Okay.
But stage two would be to take these Headwork lift station pumps. We have two pumps now that are 630 gallons per minute each. The current pumps that we have now have 6-inch pipes coming out of them, the 6-inch valves, and go out to one 8-inch force main. The pumps are too small, pipes are too small, the valves are too small, and the force main is too small. So the stage two would be to replace the pumps, the piping, and the valves, and to add a 10-inch and a 12-inch force main to take that raw wastewater out to the aeration lagoons.
Okay.
Bear in mind, our pump station is about here, and we pump from here out to here, here, and then into these two basins, and then ultimately into these two basins.
Okay. Really, my question is, do we need additional ponds utilize the potential benefits of the stage two upgrade, but can stage two by itself without a bunch of additional ponds online also give us some increased efficiency? You know, by increasing all the headworks and the pumping ability and the force main and stuff, but you got nowhere to blow it, you know. I'm just wondering, you know, if you do two and three together, can you do two by itself?
My belief is we should do one and three together at least, and perhaps add two to one. Two and three. You do not have to do, we would have to do, we really should do stage one if we're going to do stage two. We don't have to do stage three if we do stage two. The pump increases are primarily to meet high wet weather flows, and they're very temporary in nature, so ordinarily we would have capacity for those high wet weather flows. And the cost.
I was just looking over that report tonight and I didn't have it doesn't bring it, but that's fine, Jim. You can look that
up.
Yeah, stage one was 150 something.
Mr. Jenks indicates stage two to be 150,000.
And you're pretty much in agreement there. Like the stage one, you notice that we probably ought to have the two 12-inch pipes instead of one that Jenks identified. But have you found any other areas where we might need, where you're suggesting modifications to what Jenks has proposed?
There was one other area, the operations and maintenance manual for this plant. I touched on this a little bit earlier. The manual says that the metering plant has a capacity of 4.5 million gallons per day. So when we began our research on the details of the project, the first thing I noticed was that 12-inch metering plant, according to my book, got a maximum capacity of about 1.3 million gallons. So we're talking about a, more than a 3-to-1 error in the original operation maintenance manual. So that actually will have no ultimate effect on what we do, because we did discover that the plume that's there can be made to operate within the ranges that we expect over the next 10 years or so, and won't need to be replaced. It will need to be replaced before we go much beyond 600,000 gallons per day. But it'd be unlikely until now. That would be the major issue.
Any other board questions at this time, Mr. Aaron?
You can go to the audience. Yeah, any audience questions or comments? State your name, please.
Frank Cruz, I'm a resident of Como. If you have 940,000 gallons sitting there, couldn't you say that at the end of, if it becomes very pure, you can consider it potable at the end? Because San Luis Obispo, they're taking the sewer water and running it into the creek, and they've got the salmon and steelhead population now down and up. That's how pure that water is after it goes through the sewer system.
Neither our effluent or the city of San Luis Obispo's effluent will be quoted with water quality standards without additional very extensive treatment. Much cheaper to allow the water to infiltrate in the groundwater basin than in the back of our well.
But you say it's not pure enough, so it's going to pollute the groundwater, isn't it?
Well, there's a certain amount of natural filtering that occurs with the soil.
Fiscal can clean their water up where, I mean, you know, steelhead and salmon are very, if the water isn't pure enough, they're going to die from disease, right? So the water is pure enough where they have pride in there, right?
I don't know exactly what kind of treatment processes they use, but they don't have just simply to
secondary. San Luis Obispo does have what we call a tertiary treatment plant. Disinfection and then dechlorination for this plant. We don't need it for the modification process.
In other words, Mr. Small, you're saying that it goes into the groundwater that it's still filtered sufficiently, right?
The soil doesn't filter.
Well, sure, you know, but so long the water runs over sand that you're in the comes back, but still you have bacteria and stuff in there, right?
Yeah, and you also have standards you've got to meet, though, by sampling method. Oh, yeah, so you do that as well.
You've got 940,000 gallons sitting there. How long does it take for this thing to fill up? And is it going to be saturated? Is there going to be some kind of a terminal where you let this thing go into the ground at some time period or something, once a month or something?
No. If you read Mr. Jenks' report, he reported in his report that the infiltration basins that the district operates are being operated on a very optimum manner, and that there is some chance that we might increase the infiltration rate if we did extensive studies. But as they sit today, they are operating very well.
Yeah, and there's not 940,000 gallons now. That's a maximum that might happen sometime.
I mean, there's a lot of construction going on in the pool. You know, down there bulldozing over here, they're putting up houses, condominiums, whatever, apartments, right? So right now, didn't we say the last meeting there was only about 1,400 houses hooked up on the public sewer right here?
That's about right. About 1,400, 1,500.
What's the projection with this 940,000 gallons as far as population density?
I'm thinking that would probably represent at least a doubling of the population, because I'm not going to say triple, because there are a certain number of current people that are here that aren't hooked into the system yet. But maybe a doubling of the population and maybe a 2.5-fold increase in the hookups.
But how about all these subdivisions that are being put up? Aren't they all going on public sewer?
Yeah, but they're all paying a bunch of money.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm just questioning this.
Because we need $3.5 million for this thing.
Yeah, helpful.
If we don't get some development, we're going to have to kick it out of their own pocket.
And everybody else,
yeah, we're still going to Yeah, funding is, we haven't addressed funding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's a lot of liquids here, 940,000 gallons.
Per day.
Well, you remember, Mr. James looked at upgrading different means of treatment of the existing system and the most economical.
Right. Tertiary would, what, quadruple your costs?
At least,
yeah.
Plus operation.
Are you talking about the filtration or?
And, you know, who knows, 10, 20 years from now, someone might put a golf course near the area and this water could be used for that purpose. Or, you know, purely that case, maybe
sell the water, right?
It might be prudent for us to look at, you know, one or two of the early stages and try to figure out how to handle those first and see where that takes us. You know, that maybe not funding the whole thing right now, but if we can get the 500 to 600,000 gallons a day capacity at a reasonable cost, it's probably smart for us to do. At least we have.
Sell the water, you mean the product of the sewage? Which is potable water. You could actually call it potable water, but I mean, it's not drinkable. I mean, they're up in the space,
sure.
Your urine has been sacked, right? You know?
Yeah. Space suits are a heck of a lot smaller volume than what we're talking about.
True.
Glad
the technology is there, right?
What would be the cost of booking 1,000 space suits and
okay. Are there any more public questions or comments of this hearing? Anything you want to add or
no.
Subtract or
we'll
argue
more,
about?
No, I'll try to get into more detailed plans if you
want. Okay. Yeah, as we mentioned, this is just a discussion and information item, so we're not going to take any action tonight. Board members, any further questions for Jim before he sits down? Okay.
About the installation of a sewer line down Southland Street to serve some of the properties in that area. This would mean by extending the sewer line from the frontage road down Southland Street to some extent to serve the properties. Most of this area has been subdivided into one-half acre parcels, and it was suggested that maybe a petition could be put together by the district and given to the property owners who wish to circulate it, and if they received enough signatures on a petition to form an assessment district or a zone of benefit for improvements. The thought would be doing something similar to the original volunteer sewer project where they would go out and circulate a petition, get sufficient signatures on it to have the design done and paid for. And then once that is done, if they wish to proceed on the actual construction, second stage would be put together and proceeding that way. The thought is, the concept is that the district would front the design funds for the engineering study, conditional of a zone of benefit being formed where the property owners would pay back the district the monies over a short period of time, a year or two. It's very similar to the zone of benefit that was established one of the self-help housing projects. We've kind of drafted up a petition concept for your review and an engineering cost estimate for the proposed improvements. I would caution that the engineering cost estimate is based on assumptions that, well, the sewer line will go here, but when the petition goes out, the petitioners will have the option to say, well, I want to be in or I want to be out, and so the ultimate boundary may change somewhat. On the Exhibit A, if any serving the properties that front on South End and drain towards South End, between South End and Story Road, there's a kind of a depression there, and we've gone from the top of the hill to South End. When you go over that hill, you can't grab you into the lift station. If it goes out there, there's a number of large property owners that own a number of half-acre parcels. If they wish to come in and sign in, they would probably have to put in a lift station, and therefore the engineering estimate concept would probably be adjusted. It would suggest that the procedure is that the petition would be put together and given to the people that wish to circulate the petition. And based on the code and legal counsel can expound on this further, that if more than 25% of the landowners or voters sign the petition, it is sufficient to start the hearing process to forming of a benefit district. The timing aspect, I think you had me 45 days in a second hearing similar to what we went through at Summit Station on the assessment district. The thought is once the petition comes back and the proxy owners that are desirable to have this done, a boundary could be determined, and then we go off for a request for a proposal for engineering services. And that would come back before the hearing so we know what the cost of the engineering would be. And during the hearing process, we'd know what that cost would be because we have the proposals in hand. We could tentatively spread that cost among the proposed property owners so they'd have a better idea of what the engineering cost would be and go forth with the hearing. If the hearing is approved, then we form the exempted district, hire the engineer, do the engineering, and that will come back in the meantime. If it didn't go any further, then we would exercise the zone of benefit and have the people either paid off in cash, like similar to Summit Station, or they could pay off over a period of time, for a period of time.
I was going to say, the process you just described sounds a lot like the Summit Station assessment process, isn't it?
It's very similar.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead if you had something else.
If it came back with engineering and the people looked at it, had a hearing, said, yeah, we wish to go forward, and then we could go with a either a full-blown assessment district or another zone of benefit, depending on how bond council, we've talked to bond council, how to finance. But you're talking, substantial number of dollars when you get to that point, someplace $200,000-$300,000 or more, depending on what the area would be sewered. But the initial guesstimate at this time is around $24,000 for engineering services.
Okay. What about during the period of time where you have... I say the petition's been circulated and 40% of people signed it, so we said greater than 25% would be enough interest to go further with the process. They sign up to it, but the petition at that point is not a contractually binding type of document, is it? The only thing I'm a little bit worried about is fronting the engineering costs before and during the public hearing process to have those numbers available to the people and then not be able to recoup them, if the project fails.
Yeah, I would just say the only expenses the district would have, in theory, would be going out for the RFPs. It'd just be staff time. In other words, what this zone of benefit was intended to do would be have a mechanism whereby the residents would reimburse the district for whatever cost they paid in the engineering for putting together the assessment district. It's a little bit of a different twist on the Summit Station. On Summit Station, the district advanced all the engineering and the cost spreading for Summit Station and then had the protest hearing to see whether or not the assessment district we put together. The district was at General Fund was a little bit at risk during that process because the money had already been expended. This mechanism that staff has put together reverses that a little bit. In other words, this zone of benefit, if passed, will pay for the engineering and the cost spreading
before the engineering,
but before the assessment district is put together. So, in the event that we end up with an assessment district to put in the actual improvements, the district has nothing at risk other than a little bit of staff time in putting together the...
So it's before the engineering is actually completed.
Right. Oh, yes. Well, definitely.
Yeah, the zone of benefit is established before the engineering work is commenced.
To commence. It's there to pay for the engineering work.
Okay. That's good. I was just wondering about, how involved is the process as far as its cost to the district and risk.
Mainly just administrative costs.
Is this one of the areas that was included as far as that grant situation?
Yes, Paulson. This is the one of the septic prohibition area that we're trying to get 100% hookup by April of 97. Right? Okay. Going to help us in that regard. And how many property owners are we talking about? I didn't see them here.
There's approximately 40 property owners, encompassing about 23 acres, and the parcel size ranges from over 7,000 square foot up to 5 acres per property owner.
What's 24 service connections?
24.
Oh, right here, I'm reading 24, so I'm assuming that was what it was.
on that?
Right.
Estimated cost of improvement.
Oh, $24,000.
No, you've got,
you're right.
He's talking about the water service connection.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. There are four streets in the coming off Southland. Two of them already have water, and two of them do not have water.
Oh, okay.
And so the two that do not have water, when sewer service is put up there, water would service be put up there at the same time.
How about the, it says 6-inch water main. Is that big enough?
For residential areas. Well, here again, when you get into engineering, if it needs to be upgraded, it could be upgraded at that time.
Because that's where they need the more fire flow, don't they? I mean, for the fire flow, more so they do in some city.
Yeah, and it's probably, I think 400 feet up there.
Yeah. Well, I know we were having problems with 6-inch lines up there, so that's why I wonder if we ought to go with an 8-inch line there.
Well, here again, when the engineering gets done, they would look at, you know, the whole concept of, well, okay, this is going to be looped this way, it's going to loop. If you have a 6-inch line looped, it has pretty well adequate fire protection, depending on the size and length of loop. But you got to remember, when the district was first formed, Southland had a 6-inch line going all the way down it and dead end. So, it's come a long way.
Is it possible that we get into a situation where maybe 80% of residents are in favor of it, and the public hearing goes positively, and the zone of benefit that thing is instituted? What about those 10% that don't want any part of it? Are we going to go through and say, well, there is a benefit to your property because it's accessible to you, and increases your property value, whatever, increases sellability of your property, and therefore you owe this amount of money?
It would be based on where the property is. If it's right in the middle of the thing and everybody around them wishes the improvements and the water line, sewer line go by them to feed other people, it would have to be in it. If they're on the edge of it, maybe they could be excluded. We'd look at that and try and exclude those that wish to be excluded, and those that we can't exclude would have to be in the zone of benefit.
Okay. That'd also be the obvious distinction between those who get the benefit of new water and sewer versus those that just get the sewer and they have the water already. So that's how we break that price. Okay.
So, this is a situation that the district is required to. From what I understand, according to the original agreement?
The Regional Water Quality Control Board, which we haven't received an answer yet, nor pending, in the original grant and the original concept of the Regional Water Quality Control Board, said that everything in the prohibition area should be hooked up to sewer by April 1st, 1997. We questioned that and everything else, and we haven't gotten a solid answer back from the regional board. They would, since it's in the prohibition zone, and theoretically, we should hook everybody up. But I don't think it is a requirement, solid requirement. I think there's provisions in the basin plan and the regional board where, you know, if there's no physical way of hooking them up or no financial means of doing it, it's very difficult to get forced down the toilet, put it.
Any public questions?
Yeah.
Yes, could you say your name, please?
Yeah, my name is Ann Shadlow. I live at 535 Millstone in Pomo. And I bought one of these lots over there 20 years ago. 17 years ago, they put a temporary moratorium on building. So, I mean, I would certainly like to see something done. And I would imagine, on the street where my lot is, Jose Rivera has a couple of dead lots. His brother has a couple of dead lots. His mother has one. That's six, right, you know, one side of one street. And I couldn't imagine that all the people over there with these worthless lots wouldn't be just overwhelmed to be able to go ahead with this. And I'd be glad to send letters and send it to me and do what I could to see if we could do something with it.
Okay. Be a petition carrier.
After all these years, I'd like to do something with it.
Okay. Thanks.
Overdue.
Yeah. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Anyone else out there want to say something about this issue?
it's so good. How does board members feel about the draft petition? I just had a couple of things that it's a legal question, but I don't know. It said the support of said petition, the undersigned alleged as follows. Is that it's kind of mealy?
Mealy as follows. That's good legal wording.
I mean,
alleged as follows. Agree as follows.
Agree would be acceptable.
And then I was questioning the water and sewer service here because I wasn't aware I'd circled it, but you since cleared it up for me that
there was some that still had community water back there. So apparently there's some private wells in there too.
Yeah, and there's probably some property that set back quite a ways from the south end that has hooked on the south end and either privately or bootleg the water line to their property.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
It's going to be treated somewhat like on the case you said, and some of those people that said that desired not to be in the zone of benefit can get us to not do the necessary to have the things done. They can be out of it.
If they're on the edge of it.
What happens at a later date is like some station where you have to come in and pay the whole all the fees because you're out of the assessment altogether, so you have to come in and pay cash to change your mind after it gets going?
We probably have that in lieu fee like we have at some stations. In any aspect, since you're 1/2 acre lots, and if the county changes the zoning, you could break it down to maybe 1/4 acre lots, mm-hmm. and therefore you then two parcels. In lieu fee like we have at some stations. In any aspect, since you're 1/2 acre lots, and if the county changes the zoning, they could break it down to maybe 1/4 acre lots, mm-hmm. and therefore you'd have two parcels, and therefore that in lieu fee would probably kick in and basically...
The other one will get a free ride on it.
Yeah, not that we're aware of.
Yeah.
So those are some of the details as we get into this we'll have to address and look at.
The amount of money that's involved here is, maybe say $250,000 for the cost of construction and everything. We're not looking at bond issues and bond cancel and all that. Or do you have any thoughts for financing?
Yeah, I threw in 5% for financing. Basically, we contact Jay Macron, our financial consultant, and there's probably a number of ways we could. It's such a small amount. It's probably not worth going to the bond market. We'll probably go with one of these funding pools. There's a number of them out there, and usually they come up a couple times a year, and you can join them. As you go through this process, like I said, we'd be contacting Mac Brown and getting his advice and means of going, but the pool would probably be the way of going to finance a relatively small amount of money. I mean, just $250,000, but according to pools, when they're financing $10-20 million, $250,000 is a small amount.
Then, though, we have to find a partner to team up with, right? So.
No, it'd be pretty easy because, especially this association has a pool, and then there's two other private pools that have contacted us, wishing us to loan us money for projects similar to this.
Okay. I seem to remember if you try to do a small one just kind of by yourself, in order to this, there's a lot of flat fees that kind of soak you with.
Right. And it's possible as the district moves on, and the timing of this might be coordinated with maybe the district building or some future well drilling or future expansion, the sewer plant expansion, and the pool amount or whatever financing can be increased by $250,000 and add a savings to these people because the financial charges would be reduced. Those are all options that the board has when you get that far down the line.
And probably cheaper for his own benefit than himself.
That's correct. That will safely be passed on to the people.
But that can be decided later.
That's correct.
Okay, how do the rest of you feel about the concept here? I don't have a big problem with the concept. It sounds like it's all right. We're pretty much protected. The
most we have is a little bit of staff time, which isn't free, obviously, but it's something the council has to take on. But aside from the staff time, it's a petition at this point to fill out and kind of get the idea of the residents out there how interested they are. There's not a whole lot of risk to us. I don't see a problem at this point.
Yeah, basically the concept is that the district would front the front line for interim costs prior to and after the zoning of benefit is formed.
Right. So at that point we'll have something contractually binding. I mean, right. A dollar amount that these people are going to sign up to pay.
Doug, can you give us some of the benefits of this project going through to the district?
It increases the user base. Spreading out the monthly service charge so that that monthly service charge can not increase as much as it should have been in the past. As I previously brought to the board, when we were audited a number of years ago, the auditor looked at it in 1990 or 91, the five-year term, and it said at that time the district should be charging $21 a month for sewer service because the connection fees were supporting operation and maintenance. But in between that time and now, there have been sufficient increase in services that the $16 meets the operation and maintenance cost. So right. At that time, it did not.
It's in the benefit of the district to promote enlistment right now of the sewer system, right?
Well, we're not promoting it. It benefits us in that way, and also, you know, our property owners within the district, and they pay, you know, a small portion of taxes to the district, which do not really by water and sewer since they're kind of an enterprise operation. But I think the district has an obligation since we're in the boundaries of the district, and the district is a service area, providing services to these people if they so desire and if they wish to pay for it.
It feels to me like it's a promotion on the part of the district. Because I have a sense of clamor out there that the groups, people requesting these services. I think it's a good project to pursue, but somehow I feel like
I wouldn't have taken this, and I've been contacted three times by three different people.
Well, that's three out of how many? 40 or so?
Well, that's true. I mean, you'll find out if the petition goes out, if people don't sign it, they're not interested.
I'm still trying to get a sense of how the district benefits as a whole. I understand what you're saying on that one aspect. Imagine there are other areas just like this lying around.
Right. You know, and they all pay the sewer capacity charge, which goes into a fund to expand the wastewater treatment plant.
Well, in a sense, it's probably a good idea to pursue these areas. And in line, the integrity of the system is certainly a unit rather than have these stretches of areas that are unserviced out there.
Yeah. The economy of scale, a lot of people don't comprehend that. And the simple thing is, if we went to, on the water supply, build a desalting plant to serve the people here in this community, you're looking at astronomical monthly sewer, water service charges. In the LA basin, they can go ahead and put three major desalting plants down there, fully operational, and increase the charge of each customer $8 a month. That's the economy of scale.
But we don't want Los Angeles.
No, but I'm just pointing out the economy scale.
There's a point where you sacrifice quantity for quality.
Well, I'm just explaining that concept. And that concept has been improving in this district with respect to 1992 and 1995.
I can't see why we want desalting plant when we got a state water pipe out there.
I just knew that as
the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. It's a joke. You got a 42-inch pipeline out there with all the water in the world in it.
Okay,
we're going to
do
something.
What were we discussing?
That example.
I believe we've said it before a number of times that it's the responsibility of the district to serve the people and the needs of the people. And I support that kind of a theory, and I think this district should do it also. I'm very much in favor of it.
We'll get a feel from them once the petitions go out.
Of course, this is all half-acre lots out there. That should be developed.
Yeah, a lot of it is half-acre, right?
Yeah.
And right now, they cannot develop a half-acre lot.
I didn't bring the pipeline issue up. Mr. Blair did.
Have you had any kind of
We'll take care of that later.
I didn't bring it up, remember?
So basically, the general concept is drawing the money for the proposed engineering design if the position comes back in formation of assessment system. And if the board wishes to go with that concept, we'd have to go ahead and.
Okay, but you're saying funding the engineering will guarantee that they'll pay for the engineering.
That's correct.
Once it's
right. We form the zone of benefit before contracting for engineering services.
Okay. First time I hear funding the engineering process, I'm a little spooky. Once I see someone saying, oh, I'm obligated to pay you $6,000 and that's my chunk.
Well, the difference here is the district will be funding the engineering costs with a guarantee that it will be repaid.
Okay. $6,000 was a bad number. $24,000 was a total engineering cost. It's going to be much, much less than that.
Okay. Any further discussion by board members? Okay, well, let's someone word a motion somewhere along the lines that we're in favor of the concept and not in favor and not and it's all right to circulate the petitions.
Go forward with the petition.
I'll make a motion that we move forward in that manner with the petition. Circulate the petition.
All right.
I'll second that.
Motion by Director Fairbanks and second by Director Flaherty. Circulate the petitions to Tulsa's community regarding their interest in sewer line extension. All directors in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, nobody's opposed. Motion passed unanimously.
Can I ask one question? What are the areas in the
situation? The areas primary between Story Road and Joplin, that whole area is unsewered.
That's the one that's this way.
Right. And that's why, you know, the boundary here, if the circulation goes out and whoever takes the petition, I'll advise them that people outside this boundary, if they want to sign the petition, say, I want to be included, it's not a fast boundary, and I can show you that it can be moved around to take in additional people. But then you have to look in because of the terrain out there.
You're talking about inside the district road.
Inside.
Yes.
And between Southland Story, there's a depression there. And we're trying to anticipate the developments going in at the corner of Frange Road and Southland right now. I can't remember the track, but we're requesting a 15-foot easement on the back property, on the northeast property line, and that 15-foot easement is for a future sewer line. If the project ever goes, we're starting to acquire an easement for a sewer line down the back, trying to plan ahead and save money for acquisition of redwood.
So that'd be down Story and then across that?
It'll come down between Story and Southland. There's a depression there, and it's possible you're running a gravity sewer line now without putting the lift station. But we're trying to acquire easements to that area as developers come in without buying easements. So we request a dedication of a 15-foot easement from one developer in that area. And like I say, this is kind of a pseudo-tenant engineering, but kind of eyeballing the area. We can always vacate it back to the property owner, but at least we'll have it.
Okay. That wraps up item number four. This is, moving on to item number five, this is sewer service survey of commercial accounts. Mr. Jones.
Yeah, Mr. President, as previously mentioned, the staff was reviewing all the sewer survey accounts, commercial accounts, and we went out and did a outdoor or account-by-account survey, and you have the results. There were 33 accounts surveyed. Of those 33 accounts surveyed, we were billing 96 dwelling unit equivalents, and after the survey, those 96 actually were equivalent to 140, and one account was being billed over one unit, and we found that 45 were being underbilled, or 45 DUEs are being underbilled, and represents that 14 accounts were being charged to proper accounts, 19 were being undercharged, and one was being overcharged. And therefore, we will basically following the district code, we'll be sending notices out to each account and notifying them their correct current dwelling unit equipment charge on a monthly basis, and anticipate the beginning of the new charge in March 1st, 1996.
Okay. I'll send a ripple through the commission.
If there is a, I got called at home by the TNT and had this article out here. Their headlines are selling papers, you know, it says, Tacoma off 25,000 in wastewater, bill follow-up. Which there was no bill follow-up. And
what paper is that?
The Telegram
Tribune.
It's interesting that day after this article came up, they called the district and wanted to know if we would subscribe to the paper. It's fortunate I didn't answer the phone.
We haven't even had a meeting since that survey was accomplished.
But the agenda went out, which had us on in the paper. And I
talked in the office.
I talked to Cheryl Roberts. I said, you know, news must be blowing. She said, it is. So. But,
any comments? I guess that's just a report on item five. Okay. Public, questions or comments? Item number five. Is that all you had on that one?
Yes.
Okay. Item number six is under financial reports. This is the approval of warrants. We have those on a single sheet. Anything noteworthy, Doug or Donna, that you need to point out to us?
Just on the left-hand column under other check number 17658, NCSD to Assessment District 93-1, $16,290.05.
Yep.
The county gives us a blank one-check dollar amount for all taxes collected, and which go in the general fund, but this comes out and goes into the assessment district fund. It does not go in the general fund, and it's completely separate.
Okay.
Yeah,
said that for your benefit, though.
I'm sorry, I'm zoning. I got that.
Okay. Well, if everyone's happy with the warrants,
yeah, I agree. I just want to say, sorry about that. I've got a cold. That's really just kind of zoning.
Anyone like to make a motion?
I make a motion.
Yeah.
Okay. We've got a motion by Director Simon to approve the warrants. Do I have a second? And a second by Director Mendoza. All directors in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Nobody's opposed. Warrants are passed. Item number seven is the manager's report. Mr. Jones.
Yeah, Mr. President, the California Special District Association is having one of their seminars of running a district for directors and managers. Anyone interested in attending either the workshop, one's in Ontario in, on January 18th and 19th, and another one in Sacramento on February 22nd and 23rd. Some of the directors have gone to these before. Any of the directors wish to attend another one, please let us know. We'll make arrangements for you. Also, enclosed is a resolution of intention to form a groundwater management agency, which the City of Santa Maria has adopted. And then,
okay. Well, can I ask one question?
Sure.
About that one?
You know,
did you attend attend the meeting just out of curiosity or whatever? How did the public hearing go on this? Did you get any feedback?
I don't know. I talked to the clerk that the dates are wrong on the agenda in the back, and I pointed them out to you. I said, how come you published it after you adopted the resolution? She said that they were wrong, and she thanked me for pointing out to her, and so she corrected it. The December date should have been November's. Yes, it's publish it before you have the hearing.
The thing just reads so short and sweet, you know. It just gives the implication of being a rubber stamp deal.
It pretty much was, because this is just, it will be that what I foresee in this is a second groundwater management agency being formed in the Santa Maria Valley. This will probably include the City of Santa Maria, California City's Water Company area, and the City of Guadalupe. And this will be over and above. Outside the boundaries of the Santa Maria Valley Water Conservation District groundwater management area. Although the City of Santa Maria is within the boundary of the Water Conservative Santa Maria Valley Water Conservation District area, for them to participate in their groundwater management plan, they needed agreement between the two agencies, the City of Santa Maria and the other agency didn't come to agreement. Okay. And so that area is outside of their jurisdiction.
So they need their own plan.
Right, because, you know, they feel that, I guess, they're important all the state water, and they want to make sure.
But that may work okay with civilians because, or not, I should say residents because they can come down and protest. But, of course, for a governmental agency, it requires them to have a meeting, a staff report from their staff, and board action in order to constructively add or respond to an intended LAFCO action. The LAFCO board agreed with that and is stretching the executive committee to come back with a recommended time to give other agencies notice, and we believe that it'll probably be somewhere around 45 days, between 30 and 45 days, so there'll be plenty of time for like this district or any other district or a city to prepare an appropriate response if the LAFCO Commission is intending to exercise any of its powers within the sphere of influence of a city or a special district. They also agreed to have the executive committee at least look at a memorandum of understanding between the various county departments that staff LAFCO. And what an MOU would be intended to do would be to have sort of a contractual agreement that's saying, you know, while you are working with for LAFCO, your energies will be devoted towards the last time parameters. So although it won't physically separate or create an independent staffing for LAFCO, at least there'll be a memorandum of understanding of who's supposed to do what and when and who they're acting on behalf when they're doing it. So it will at least give the appearances of independent staffing, which is probably pretty important. And I think the LAFCO Commission also took up the issue of changing their letterhead. As you may know, when you receive a correspondence from the LAFCO Commission, it's on county letterhead. It doesn't really quite give the appearance of an independent agency. So they reviewed and adopted their own letterhead. So they are making steps moving towards accommodating their member agencies that belong to the LAFCO Commission. So they're making progress, in my view.
Okay. And then at the last board meeting, when the board approved the contract agreement for repairing, the contract for repairing the TV bike repairs, we were putting $50,000 on reserve, and I basically showed the reserve as of November. $315,000, take away $50,000, leaves $265,000 in that reserve account. And then there's information on the Niger thing, and then also there's the American Water Works Association conference coming up in San Diego in February. It's Water Reuse 96, and I've included basically the outline of the activities that would be there if any board members are interested in going with the paper.
And the first one that you mentioned is available is really a special district seminar for management of special districts.
Right, and board members.
Okay.
Mr. Blair and Director Simon attended those last year.
Okay, and those were CSDA sponsored or
right.
something?
Right, and then the latter one is American Water Works Association.
Okay. Times, particularly the February dates, are almost overlapping now, so we might be able to do something in February.
What's
your
preference? I said San Diego.
And when you send Diego, then you can start coming out. Okay.
That's all I have, Mr. Chris.
Well, you have any questions for Mr. Jones? Any comments by the public? Anything Mr. Jones reviewed?
Item number 7 is complete. And item number 8, the director's comments already.
Any director's comments at all? Okay. Public comments. Any public comments? Public comments going once. Going twice.
Here's the opportunity if you wanted to say something on the safe play. I even brought it up.
I thought you were going to tip it over.
Okay. Well, we have a quiet public then tonight. Everyone's ringing in the new year, I guess, with a headache. Probably
got cold.
Everyone's got colds and depressed because of all the Christmas expenses. We need to go to a closed session regarding a couple matters of litigation. Mr. Right. Sykes?
Yes, we'll be going to closed session. These closed sessions are authorized by Government Code Section 54956.9 for the board to discuss existing litigation with its counsel. The two cases that are involved is one called the State of California versus the Pomona Community Service District. That's case number CVO78345, and that's the condemnation lawsuit for the easement going there across the wastewater treatment plant. The other one is just litigation. It's the Pomona Community Service District versus Shell Oil, what has to do with the polybutylene pipe.
Okay, with that said, close this part of the open public meeting, and we need to go to a closed session. Thank you all for coming. Appreciate it.